This is a podcast full of ideas, crammed full of artists, musicians, composers, and curators. There is nothing easy in creating new music, but with determination, energy, and inspiration, anything is possible. I'm Ben Eshmade. Let me introduce you to some rather amazing and inspiring souls.
For me, the distinction between sound and music is really not there. I don't come from a traditional music background, so always my music output has been through computers, through machines, through field recording. So I'm really, to me, sound is music.
And for me, it's like collage, and just listening and following the sound, like a ball rolling. You're listening to the first in a series of composer-curator podcasts from Sound & Music. On this podcast, we start here in Belfast and we'll travel to London to hear from two other sets of composer-curators and find out about who they are and how they've been exploring new music. Hi, I'm Helena. It's the 9th of July and we're here in Flax Art Studios, my studio here in Belfast.
Hi, my name's Koichi. I'm working with Helena Hamilton, and we've just had the first of our series of two events. Resist is not like directly politically, but more in terms of culturally. Push the boundaries and cross boundaries and fuse disciplines and do something experimental with sound and art and music. The very beginning of the idea was earlier this year. I'd played four shows in cathedrals as part of the Home of St. Patrick Festival, in four cathedrals in Northern Ireland, just DJ sets. I had a kind of, not in a religious way, but a kind of transcendental experience on the last show. I just remember looking up. It was the Armagh Roman Catholic Cathedral, playing this really amazing ambient music and looking up at the structure, and I just felt it kind of elevated, you know, me somehow. I just felt that. And we wanted to create a similar environment, kind of elevate the experience of a club night using visual art.
How did it go last night?
Felt it was really, really successful. The music was amazing, the vibe was fantastic, and just the general atmosphere and how people were feeling and how they expressed they experienced it was really, really positive.
Yeah, it was a really nice vibe in the space.
Quite simply, the Black Box is, you know, the best or most well-known arts venue in Northern Ireland, so it was the obvious choice for this event.
It's also, I find the Black Box, they're really willing to work with you on events, which is really, I think, key to events like this, and they're very supportive.
It was a very ambitious event on lots of levels, the music through to obviously the visual side of it.
Well, it just really came through collaborating together, working on small ideas and just growing from there. And the music programming came really naturally. Lee Gamble was a really a clear choice, someone I've really respected and known as an innovator of electronic music for many, many years. And Shiva's someone who I've only really found out about recently, just a shared interest in her work with Helena.
Shiva Feshareki.
I wanted to get involved with Resist because I really like their concepts behind the night, the way it's sort of the physicality and club meets art and that sort of idea. It was a new context for my turntabling as well, so I was really keen to take on the project. I also was really admiring the curators because they're also artists and musicians themselves, and I always think that that makes a massive difference to an event when it's organised by artists themselves, because they always have a really creative way of thinking about creating events. It wasn't typical because all my performances are different, and also as I work with improvisation on my decks, I often practice structural elements beforehand, but then when I'm turntabling, I let the actual content and the material form through improvisation. But then context is really important. So I adapted my performance, my set, to fit the concept of the evening as well as the space it was being performed in, with the idea of the connection of art and electronic music. I think it's a really brilliant concept for an event. And for example, when I was performing, a lot of people were, you know, sitting on the floor and sort of concentrating with focus on the performance. Whilst when Lee Gamble was DJing, you know, it's dance music for dancing. So I think that in itself is really great for an event. You've got dancing and then you've got more focused listening and also the visuals. So yeah, it was a really great evening in that respect. Yeah, I really enjoyed being involved. I loved experiencing Belfast because I'd never been before. And actually Koichi was really amazing because he took Lee and I around the whole of Belfast basically and gave us a really great tour, and I learned a lot about the place and different areas, so that was also really enriching for me, just to learn about this new place.
Interested to ask how you both met for the first time.
Well, Koichi was doing his PhD in SARC and I was doing my master's. That's how we met. We're a couple as well, so.
Helena really starts with a concept, with something very considered, and works from that point. So it's completely opposite directions, and actually it really works. Mm. I thought that would be the reason we'd never be able to work together, but it actually really works, doesn't it?
Yeah. From my side, yeah, I thought it wouldn't. I was like, oh goodness, I don't know. Because, yeah, as you say, you're just more piecemeal-y. You just sort of throw things on and then try this out and try that out. Whereas, yeah, I like to really sit and think and listen and keep listening and keep listening and watch some TV to sort of take like a chill out brain moment, do you know, because it gets really intense. but that's why it works, I guess. And also Koichi is really good at the stuff I'm not particularly good at, and then I do stuff that he doesn't do. So in that way it works as well, do you know, like you're more like doing the promotion side of things and all that, do you know, which I'm not particularly good at that sort of stuff.
It was very interesting to see on a very basic level people sort of taking selfies and sort of like taking ownership, I suppose, of what you're creating.
Yeah, that is always very interesting with art. I guess it's something that you really need to think about whenever you're making, because that is how people now, essentially how, that's their first reaction, well, let's take a selfie with this. It is quite hard to create an art piece in a club environment, do you know. You can't consider it as much as you can if it's in a gallery space, and I'm very aware of that. So you need to take in a lot of different things, like, okay, someone might be really drunk and pull at this, and that's okay. People want to run through the drapes, yep, okay, leave them to it.
You know, doing an installation was something I've never experienced before. I was literally on my knees with a saw and a drill, cutting wood, drilling holes into, you know, I was saying to Helena, how do you do this? And she was saying this is actually quite a small installation. You know, she's been doing the same thing on her own without anyone's help for 5 days before, and that's just like a normal thing for her art shows. So it really opened my eyes to how much work goes into, you know, actually installations.
Very early days to ask this question, but how do you value success?
Wow, we just felt like we'd won. You know, it just felt like a victory on the day. It just looked amazing and people really enjoyed it. And we did something that was truly different. And, you know, I feel we did kind of elevate the kind of club environment. So
once you create an artwork or an environment or a sound thing and you feel at peace with it, that to me is success. And you're, I guess it's easy to say, and you're happy with it, but there's a feeling you get, do you know, whenever you put something together, and you're like, yes, I feel like that worked, even if only 10 people show up, do you know, if you feel like it works, that's success.
There's a very good interview with John Cage, and he says, I consider music to be the production of sound. So that kind of says it, doesn't it, in a very simple way. The production of sound is music. end of story. I think that means that we can't talk about it anymore in a way, because that it covers everything. But I like the way it covers everything. I'm Steve Beresford, and I'm in Café Otto's project space, which is just around the corner from Café Otto itself in Dalston. Co-curator, I believe. Is that right? I'm the co-curator with Blanca Regina of Art of Improvisers.
And this is a podcast for sound and music.
What were your aims and ambitions for your series of events?
So with the Art of Improvisers, we are looking at the art, visual artwork that is produced by musicians, and also we are looking at free improvisers, musicians, and their relation with visual art. For this edition, we focus in women in free improvisation.
Everybody who took part seemed to have a brilliant time, and everybody I've spoken to went to the exhibition and the concerts also did. I bumped into a guy serving me a cup of coffee in Deptford yesterday, and he said, oh, I was there on Friday night, and he wanted to know how much of it was actually really improvised, because he couldn't quite believe that it was, but I assured him that it was. Yeah, I think it was quite an important concert for him. I got the impression it was the first time he'd been to anything like that.
These are the main things that happened to us. We end up playing with someone we didn't play before, never, and it looks like we've been playing with this person for ages. It happened with the performance I did with David Toop. I was really looking forward to it, and it was unexpected, and people told us, like, oh, I really like this song that you did there and that singing, and it's like, oh my goodness, I don't know, what are you talking about? But it's fantastic that then we can listen to that recordings, and then those recordings are a work in itself and could give us ideas to produce more, or we just kind of leave it behind and keep on moving.
How did your performance go with Maggie Nichols?
I absolutely adored working with Maggie. The funny thing is, I've known Maggie since the little theatre club days, which would be early 70s. So I was very happy about that, partially because I really like voice and piano duos. I love Tony Bennett and Bill Evans. That's one of my favorite records. And obviously we didn't do music that resembled that.
My name's Andy Brown, and I'm in the Otto Project space for the Art of Improvisers exhibition. My music itself has always been influenced by visual image and always been influenced by film and sculpture. I mean, I've always been a huge fan of metal sculpture particularly. I really love somebody like Barbara Hepworth, and to me there's a lot of musicality in her work. And so I think I've always kind of thought about my music in that way. It's always had in my mind quite a strong visual image, but actually being able to make film to work completely together with the sound and vice versa has been brilliant. I've really enjoyed it, and it's something I really want to carry on doing, and I just find it really inspiring. Basically it's almost like the two parts of my practice were sort of waiting to mesh in one, and they have, and that's really exciting. This is a conversation I've had with other friends about experimental music. When you're in it, and when you've been in it for a long time, you don't bat an eyelid at anything because you're used to seeing these things. But if you get somebody who's not, and sometimes they just don't know what to do. I mean, for example, with Gina's performance on Friday, I loved it. I mean, Gina was basically making a sculpture on stage and running around and creating a riot, you know, running around with these tin plates on her feet. But I suppose if you hadn't seen something like that before and you're used to something a little bit more kind of traditional, you probably wouldn't know what to make of it. So from that point of view, it's always interesting to see those kind of reactions. But by and large, people have come in and they've spent quite a lot of time actually looking at the work and taking it in, and that's been really nice.
My name's Julie Pickard. I think of myself as an artist, a writer, and a musician.
Could you describe what we have in front of you?
Yeah, this is, some of this is a little earlier, but it sort of shows a progression, what I've been doing by drawing music and musicians. I don't look at the paper when I'm drawing at all, so I might well lift the paper, you know, the pen up, or I might have a feeling I've got lost and not know where I am in relation to the paper. So I just kind of take my baby fingers and look for the edge of the paper.
Really?
And then I carry on.
Hello, my name's Terry Day. I started painting pictures when I was 14, and I came from a family of musicians, so there's always been two things to me, painting and music.
Did you talk about what you were playing on Thursday night? That was one of the ones...
Thursday, I played the bamboo reed pipes, and that was the first time I played two only, and the balloons. And I played with Rhea, it was the second time I played with Rhea, and the first time was in the studio, and she was over the other side of the room, and the guy had mic'd it up really well, and because of that I was quite happy with that. It was very nice, and I could hear her really clearly. Although she's really quiet, but she was amplified really well. So I virtually have been spent all my life just walking into an improvised situation without any prior discussion. So, and then with the bamboo pipes, it's very limited. So there's only four fingerings. So it's very limited. So you can't do plinky plonk on it. Well, you can, but you're going to end up... You can't. It's an instrument. You've got to play it.
Sound. Music. Sound. Music.
I really enjoyed the setup of the exhibition where we started to display all the works, where all the artists came around and the space was totally different. And that process of transforming the space is a very big moment of gratification. I have like sound effects coming in to reinforce my speech. And then another very interesting moment was when the artists are just telling you, thank you so much for this, it really helped me to produce this work, or it's been a great opportunity, and you feel, oh my goodness, we know that this is going to be important, but we don't know that it's important until we really kind of listen to those words of gratification or feeling that it was worth to do the work. It was always worth.
Well, I think those two words, transport and transform, which, yes, you can't measure them, you know, you can't get a 12-inch ruler out and say, well, that was about 10 inches of transportation and 11 inches of transformation. But clearly, if those things happen, I think that's very good. And clearly, I think it's happened a lot in this festival.
You're listening to the first in a series of composer-curator podcasts from Sound and Music. On this podcast, we travel next to Dalston in London to hear about my new concert series and project, Drift Glass. Okay, so I'm really into sci-fi, and at the moment I'm really into reading Samuel Delaney books, and he's an African-American sci-fi writer, and there's a little bit in the story where it describes how glass looks different outside of the water and inside of the water, and how as it's traveling through the water it changes depending on its environment, I guess. And I feel that relates directly not only to sci-fi but to
improvised music and jazz music. It's always changing depending on the environment it's played in, depending on the people involved. It looks different in certain scenarios. So I thought Drift Glass really encapsulated that idea. I'm Cassie Kinoshi, the band leader of Seed Ensemble, and we're at Total Refreshment Centre in Dalston, and I think it's the 18th of August for the first performance of the Drift Glass event. Total Refreshment Centre's been like a really amazing gem in terms of supporting underground artists and supporting bigger names as well, and the crowd that comes here is always really attentive. They always listen to the music. They're always open to new experiences and listening to new music. So I thought this would be a really good venue just because of the sort of crowd that it pulls.
Why did you want to do it, to ask an obvious question? Yeah, why?
I love working with different artistic people from different, like, so from theatre, from poetry and dance. I love creating an atmosphere where creatives across London from different backgrounds can come together to produce something, because there's not a lot of opportunity to do that, really. So I thought, well, I might as well do it with my own music. It's hard to get gigs for 10-piece bands, so I thought I'm going to just put it on myself.
Hi, my name's Rio. I'm the bass player in Seed. The first thing is that the music itself is very exciting. It kind of brings together like elements of jazz and like more Afro-Caribbean roots, which is something that I can very much identify with. And I've never really played in a large ensemble before, so that's also very cool. The most exciting thing really is these collaborations. Working with some of these new artists, we've worked with Zana before. Actually, I did some stuff with Charisse as well in another project, which was a lot of fun. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that side of it.
Okay, I'm Zana. This afternoon, I'm going to be practicing with everybody and practicing one of the features that I have on one of the songs called Afronaut. Possibly as well, like making sure that my own live loop machine is working all right.
What's it like collaborating with Cassie?
She's amazingly talented as a composer. Like, she really understands so many different elements of how you construct music, but not just in a technical form, but music with emotion. You can really see that she has this energy and this kind of this really wonderful pure vibe for just wanting to create beautiful sound and wanting to also be in a place with like people to create that. For me, it's so nice when you're performing and you just catch a vibe and you roll with it, and then you end up playing 2 hours over what you were supposed to be playing. Still, like, it ends up being a really incredible gig and an experience, and also you end up learning a lot, because from what you freestyle, what you improvise, or what you vibe of, you're like, oh, I really liked what I did then, let me build something from that. So I think there's nothing wrong with kind of just being in the moment and feeling it and stuff.
Candles in the sky cause my eyes to lift up, my lingering mind yells, run, it's a stick up. But it's too late. The moon and stars have got me, but oddly I feel at home in this unknown, and it's probably because we share the same history, but future is the mystery. I mean, maybe I'll shine, or maybe I'll just be too dim to see.
My name's Tyrone Isaac Stewart, performing artist, dancer, musician, creative.
And I'm Mr. Echo, rapper, spoken word, lyricist. So yeah, we're just chilling out before the gig starts. Yeah, just enjoy. I really love just having a full band around me. It's something that I think as a rapper, you don't get to do a lot. And when you get those sorts of opportunities, you've got to snap them up. So much fun.
I presume there's a lot of freedom within what she's made. Could you talk about that a little bit?
It was kind of, here's the tracks. Here's a few that you might want to jump on. Found the one that fit and pretty much just gave free rein to say that, do your thing over it. And then even this time, it's been so cool as well, having Tyrone, who's going to be dancing to one of the pieces as well while I'm doing spoken word.
Cassie's great to work with. First of all, she's really like good at giving you an insight to her mind, not just through the music, but being able to show you sort of what's influencing the music. But then second of all, she's really open to what she can't necessarily see. So she'd tell me what she wants, but she might not know how it's going to be danced.
For me, freestyle is all about the vibe. Like, I think you can come be prepared or whatever, but at the end of the day, when the crowd's in front of you and everyone's there, that energy that gets created is something that you can't replicate. And so for me, I think I thrive off that more than anything else, really.
I think one thing that's different in this is it's very intimate. So it's going to instantly change when me looking out to nobody becomes like someone who's within hands touching distance and I'm trying to tell them a story through movement. So in some ways it makes it more nerve-wracking, but in other ways it makes it more real. And I think it's going to change what someone's doing, how they're looking at you, if they're bored, if they're smiling. Yeah, the moment the crowd comes in, I think it's really going to just uplift.
It was better than I imagined, mainly because I always find that after, so during rehearsals, everyone's reading, everyone's really concentrating on the charts. But then when you get to the gig, everyone's more comfortable and a lot of ideas come out like through improvisation and it comes together.
The music and the organising, you're talking weeks, if not months.
Yeah, it's been months. So the music I've written over the course of a year, because we formed last year in March. I think the biggest challenge leading it is mainly just getting everyone in the same room for rehearsal, really, and making sure that people don't double book themselves. Leading, like when you're playing on the stage, is fine, really. It's pretty easy just to point at people and you can make it look cool and dance and like whatever. So,
could you talk about those little moments on the night a few days ago when you were inspired, that when you obviously busy making sure the music was going, but then out of the corner of your eye, you could see some magical stuff happening?
Yeah, it was really inspiring to see that both of the poets and Charisse as a vocalist, just seeing how they connected with the band and all the musicians was just really inspiring. And then Tyrone, seeing how he interpreted music, connected with, especially with the drummer. So our drummer Patrick Boyle and him had some kind of connection there when he was soloing on one of the tunes. It was amazing to see that. And then seeing all the videos afterwards, it's just incredible, yeah. It's great to see all the stuff that people have been sharing, actually, just an amount of support we've got online and just in general is really, it's great.
How would you define the word composer? Because obviously in the world of jazz and improvisation, that's a lot looser and maybe even misconceived.
I'm kind of having a challenge with that myself. Like, I've been reading for a while, rereading the book Into the Maelstrom by David Toop. But that's about what a composer is, and is improvisation composition? I think it is. I think it's spontaneous composition. But I think when you are writing the notes down, then as a composer, that's sort of, it's all about communication and putting across a message. So the way like Bernstein describes a composer is what I connect to the most, all about communication and pulling messages out. But I really do want to write more music that is less conventional and it's more about interpretation, a bit more open. What most people who are in a band grew up with listening to. So we all grew up listening to maybe grime or classical and hip hop and jazz, rock music, all of that we grew up with. And there's so much technology that you have access to everything anyway. So it does creep into your music. And then as an improviser, it's going to come out in your playing anyway. It's going to, which is really exciting.
It was really nice to hear the passion and the strong message, but it's obviously very personal for you.
Yeah, definitely. It's one of the reasons I started Seed was to write music about issues that are important to me, like societal issues, race issues, all sorts of those things. So some of the tunes take, you know, their lyrics from Langston Hughes, so they do have words, but even if they're played without words, I'll always take the time to explain to the audience this is what this piece is about, just because sometimes I think it's important for them to know.
Where do you go next? I mean, in the short term, you've got another event in September.
I think at the moment, the biggest thing in regards to Driftglass is making it even bigger, making it into, as I said, like the immersive theatrical experience is something that I'm really excited to sit down and look at. I also want to get involved more with writing ballet and opera. I've been having this ballet idea for about 5 years, so I need to sit down and properly work at it and contact the right people. Yeah, I've got a notebook full of ideas, really, like all this stuff that I don't have actual time to do right now. But yeah, just getting involved as much as possible in lots of other things, contemporary dance, and traveling around Europe as well to get involved in projects.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from Sound & Music, which is focused on the Composer Curator series here in Belfast and also in London.
I'm Ben Eshmade. Thanks to everyone who lent their voices, music, sound and passion to this podcast. Sound & Music's Composer Curator programme is kindly supported by PRS for Music Foundation and Arts Council of England.
Music. We'll travel further around the UK in our second podcast, so tune back in for that.
Please find, follow and subscribe to this series at soundandmusic.org.